Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's going on? You're listening to the Top Chef Post Show. We're going to try this one. We haven't done it before, but, you know, I write about Top Chef every week. I spend, like, way too many hours of my life covering it, but you know, people like it, and I doubled my whole like subscriber count on Substack when I started covering Top Chef. Mm-hmm. So listen, the fans have spoken, and here we are, and I thought, why not have a podcast component of that? And for that, I got my fellow Top Chef super fan from the Round Ball Rock podcast.
It's me.
Mr. Joey Devine. Yeah, we said it in unison all day.
Yeah, I love Top Chef. It's like the only TV show I actually like, I think.
Mm-hmm.
This season I feel like has been a little predictable, though.
Yeah.
But we'll get into it.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I don't know what it is about people that cover basketball and Top Chef, but there seems to be a lot of crossover.
Weird
there.
Overlap, yeah.
Yeah, the Pack Your Knives guys are both basketball guys. Mm-hmm. You and Joey,
They're a different type of basketball guy than I am, though.
Yeah?
They're like, they like numbers and stuff, and are like professionals, and I'm like a guy who's like, Carl Anthony Towns is corny. Wah!
You're not into sabermetrics?
No, I mean, sure. As an Oakland A's fan, I think I have to be, but, you know.
Just as a casual basketball, I basically only watch the NBA during the playoffs because the rest of the season seems like mostly meaningless and the playoffs go on for so long. Like, my armchair take is like, I just look at Rudy Gobert and he seems like a corny dork. I don't know
he
if
is.
That's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
He's a big Joe Rogan fan.
Okay.
That's all you need to know about.
I wouldn't
Rudy
have
Gobert.
Gotten that. I just seemed like, I don't know, he seemed like a corny guy. And now I don't really know.
Here's
who
a question for you, Vince.
Hmm.
If you were a Top Chef fan who only liked the playoffs, when would you start?
Ooh, that's a good question. I guess like right before the finale.
Like now, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
This would be the first episode you would watch, is the one we just watched.
Yeah, this is sort
Top
of
five.
Like, this is like the
yeah.
play-in. But you
yeah.
know, the real playoffs start when they get to Curacao, I guess
yeah,
they're going to.
It's a cruise. It's not even Curacao. Like, okay, so I think I can predict what they're going to do next season, next
okay.
episode. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
So they very specifically went out of their way to be like, you're going on a cruise.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to.
Which you
to,
figure they wouldn't say unless they have some sort of spawn.
Well,
con
they
tie
definitely,
in.
They're the best at sponsorship. Like yeah. this episode had maybe the most egregious sponsorship Top Chef has ever done.
Are you talking about? I think I know what
dinner,
you're going to say.
They
go
went
ahead.
To dinner. They're at dinner with the owner of the restaurant. And Tom goes, this one's on me. And then yeah. drops his Wells Fargo card on the table.
I mean, that was egregious, but I also feel like they have gotten,
I loved it.
I loved it.
I
because,
want to make it very clear. I loved it.
No, it didn't grind the show to a halt. And like, I feel like in the past they, I don't know, they let the sponsors maybe order them around too much. Cause in the past, I feel like they've had to do like Padma's had to do a full sentence or two of SpawnCon copy. Like, I'm going to be paying with my MasterCard Plus card right now, which you can do too for touchless pay, you know? And then this one, it was just like, all right, we know what it is. It was a quick shot. It was done.
Yeah.
Loved it.
And Tom was like, Tom like said it sarcastically. It ruled. Yeah, But no, the next challenge is they're on a cruise ship, right? Mm-hmm. So I bet you the quick fire will be some kind of room service thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where like Gail and Tom and the judge are all in separate rooms and they're like, I would like brunch today.
Yeah.
And then they have to go deliver to him. And the main challenge will be like some kind of, they each have to run. It'll either be buffet based or they each run like one of their restaurants, like one of the individual restaurants on the cruise ship where it's like, and then the cruise goers have to be like, oh, do I want Thai food or do I want Milwaukee brick cheese or whatever Dan maybe is going to make.
Maybe you should be a Top Chef producer. You're planning some pretty good challenges here.
But when they said cruise, I was like, okay, I know exactly what we're doing. And then the finale will be in actual Curacao.
Right. I mean,
they're going to be on the ship in that first. The next challenge is a ship challenge. Yeah. Sure.
That place that we all know is synonymous with fresh food, like being on the ocean for, you know, a week on it. All right. So before we get into the episode specifically, like thoughts on this season so far?
It feels like a weak season. And I say that I'm kind of sad that it's a weak season because, it's been rough on Kristen. Like, I feel like Kristen's going to get some blame for it being a weak season, and she should take no blame. She's been great.
Yeah, I agree.
I
want
to say that right off the top. I love Kristen, but I feel like the quickfire change is bizarre. I don't ever remember who won last episode. Like, why is the immunity carrying over from last episode? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Why did Sue get kicked off when he had like a good quickfire dish? Like he almost won his quickfire. Like it just, and Manny's, it just sucks. And also we all know, look, I know they never said it. They were counting the quickfires.
Yeah, that's
before.
What I was going to say. Like to me, these don't feel like changes. It just feels like they're explicitly saying things that we always knew, which is that, your past output as a chef is going to matter a little bit.
Yeah, know that.
And the quickfire is going to, like, those things, these are all the same people judging. There's no way they can compartmentalize that.
Well, and I also feel like this season has had a lot of strange, like, look, Manny seems like a very nice man.
He seems like the one I would most want to hang out with. Of
yes, for sure. And Laura, I'm sure, makes great Mediterranean food. But it was like, it felt like there were a lot of episodes in a row where people who shouldn't necessarily be there were hanging on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I can't believe that Laura is still around. I mean, she seemed like she turned it around this episode, but boy. But yeah, so the question I sort of have in terms of this being a weak season, like, is it weak
because
the food is weak?
Win?
Well, okay, yeah. Is it weak because the food is weak, or is it weak because there's a lack of personalities, or is it weak because there wasn't a lack of personalities? It just turns out that all of the people with the biggest personalities tended to get kicked off the earliest, or what? Like, what are you thinking?
Because I don't think the personality matters as much on Top Chef. I think the challenges have not been as interesting as normal.
Hmm.
And I think it's a strange thing where a guy is actually dominating.
Yeah.
But not in like a fun way like Melissa or May or Buddha did it.
Yeah.
You know, or Brooke. Like, those seasons were fun because it was like, man, this lady is kicking fucking ass.
Yeah,
like,
but I'm trying to define what make. I mean, to me, I think I'm trying to define what makes a dominant competitor an interesting season versus this season. I feel like the only thing that I can think of is that there seems to be like this disconnect between how much the judges like Danny's food and how interesting it looks on TV.
Yeah.
Like, because watching it, like, Sue's food, that looked, like, interesting.
It looked crazy.
It looked crazy.
I was like, what is this guy doing?
Yeah, but it also looked
the
like...
the first dish he made on Last Chance Kitchen. First off, I felt like they sort of screwed Sue over just the jump, where it was like, oh, this super handsome, charismatic guy who apparently is good at cooking with a great backstory is like, is like K-holed in this weird web show that is like a carryover from a like earlier generation of media. Like,
I'm confused with what they did with Last Chance Kitchen in general, because like I still am trying to figure out what happened to cowboy hat guy. Cause like,
well, he clearly didn't want to do it.
So the original Tom tweet the day of was like, oh yeah, he didn't want to go on. And then he deleted that tweet and said like, oh no, he already got a second chance because the first elimination challenge was like a 2 or 3 parter, which both made sort of sense.
Other one doesn't make sense because like they break the, when it comes to Last Chance, first off, I love Last Chance Kitchen. I know I kind of just shit talked it, but like, I like Last Chance Kitchen because it's when you actually see Tom Colicchio happy.
Yeah.
Like he loves it. He loves watching them cook the whole time and like putting his little reading glasses on to look at the food. He loves it. It's the time you get to see a miserable man be in his element.
Yes.
I don't think they liked that guy.
They definitely didn't. I mean, the first thing he did was insult Tom's hats, like right out the gate, which, you know, I'm sure they like edited it to make it feel like, you know, a bigger deal than it was. But I feel like Tom would remember that. But then he came out, David Murphy came out and like put something on Instagram that said like, oh no, I wanted to do Last Chance Kitchen and they like didn't let me. So now I have no idea what the actual story is there. It feels like there was a story there, but you know, everybody's contractually bound not to say what it actually was.
Look, this is a Substack thing. This is paywalled, right? People aren't going to hear this unless they're paying you.
I was going to put it up for free, but
I can go up for free. I was just going to say, would you be at all surprised if they discovered later there's some Me Too incident that hasn't come out about that guy, so they were just like, shuffle off.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Or some kind of controversy. I'm not saying there is. I'm just saying that would be an explanation.
Right. That would be an explanation. You know, they've talked about how much they increase like the vetting process after Gabe, what's his face?
Yeah.
Won a few seasons ago and then immediately had like a big controversy and basically got scrubbed from the Top Chef record. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if that happened.
Here's another thing that I think makes the season weak, actually. Mm-hmm. Savannah is like a classic Top Chef story, right? Where it's like somebody who was choking a lot and then they hit a like hard stride.
Yeah.
Just to forget to put things on the plate in the finale. That's what always happens to that person.
Yeah.
Her food looks very interesting. Like she is very interesting. Her story, she was awesome in this episode.
Yeah.
I thought the editing was funny where they made it look like she was winning the blind taste test and then she lost.
Yeah, she had the worst.
But as a personality, she's not that interesting. Like, Shota. Like, Shota to me is like, when you brought up Gabe, I was like, oh, what made that season great, even though Gabe was kind of dominating, was like, Shota was so... such an interesting underdog.
Yeah. Likeable. He had a backstory. Yeah. He had a cool dog. He had a family that was
dumb,
like stuck.
He had dumb facial hair.
And I don't know, this season, it feels like they're sort of parceling out the backstory maybe more than they should. Like we only just found out 11 episodes in that Manny used to be a law student, which maybe isn't that interesting, but it took a long time for Danny to reveal that he had OCD, which I already assumed. same thing with Manny's punk band. Mm-hmm. Same thing,
With Dan's wife. Same thing with Dan's wife,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you're like, why is this guy Hispanic, but he seems like he's Muslim also?
No, not that's Danny's wife. I was talking about Dan's wife.
Okay. This was the other competitor that I just had like assumed was gay in my head canon. I'm not trying to be like, oh, that guy's a wife? That guy's gay. But like, I don't know, maybe the first editing package, I feel like, of the season, he said something about his partner.
First, yeah.
And maybe I just assumed like his, you know, husband and not business partner. But then there was also, what was the Haitian guy's name? He was wearing like full on like floral headscarves.
Yeah, that guy was cool. I don't remember that guy's name, but I think
I definitely assumed he was gay also, and I feel bad about that. But you know, he was wearing floral headscarves. I don't think that was like a like a big reach. Like, I don't know. I'm not trying to assume everyone's gay when they're
Vince
not.
Vince lives in Central California. You'll have to, you know, Modesto Vince is coming out for like four years.
Anybody who doesn't have a goatee and a dip cup, I'm like, is this guy gay or what?
Yeah, you're like, what? This guy's truck isn't lifted. This guy's gay.
I guess it's like it has incepted me in that way. But yeah, like they keep parceling out the backstory when I wonder, like, maybe you should have just, you have hour and a half episodes this season. Maybe
they're
just,
so long.
Just come out.
I was late to this podcast finishing this episode.
Yeah.
Because I thought I was like 48 minutes. If I started now, I'll be right in time to be fresh.
Yeah.
55 minutes.
Yeah. So this episode, I also feel like there were maybe some interesting things that happened that the cameras like missed and the editing couldn't quite recreate again. Like it seemed like, so okay, this episode they did the blind taste test
challenge, our favorite,
which
everybody
is fun. It's fun. I would like to do that just as a thing to do.
I prefer earlier though.
Yeah, same. But during that Chef Laura was it seemed like she
spitting
was spitting
the food out
in between
on the ground.
Yeah, yeah, and the cameras didn't like capture that. Uh-huh. And that would have been like a good like TV moment to capture, and they kind of whiffed on that one.
I also think Laura's an interesting person because
yes,
she's so cold is the wrong word, but like blank, standoffish, yes. Like her story should be so much more interesting. It's like, oh, she worked for Thomas Keller.
Mm-hmm.
She's a Mexican lady from Mexico City who married like an Israeli guy who only cooks Middle Eastern food.
Oh, is he Israeli? I thought,
I don't know.
She said something about spending time in Turkey. So I thought it was Turkish.
You know, it's like one of the, it's Middle Eastern, but not,
from the Levant. Yeah. Like when she came out, and I feel really dumb that I didn't pick up on the fact that her accent is clearly like Mexican and not Middle Eastern, but I was sort of like, oh cool, like a Turkish chef, like Turkish food is kind of a angle that hasn't maybe been explored as much as it could be, and I was sort of into that. And then yeah, and then her food sort of seemed convoluted. So she has a thing. You're right. Like, she seems blank. She seems like she's very competitive, like, in her soul, but it only, like, it only comes through in her actions and not necessarily, like, in her
affect. Like when she spent all their team's money.
Yeah, or this episode.
She's spitting food on the floor.
She's spitting food on the floor. My favorite part of this episode was the challenge was that, you know, whatever foods that they chose correctly in the blind taste test, they would then have access to make a dish in the second part of the quick fire challenge. And at the end of it, they're like, all right, you guys have 20 minutes, go. Her and Danny both like rushed to the trays and were boxing each other out to try and get to the trays. And it was like, guys, the trays literally have your names on them.
The trays,
like,
are yours. Yeah.
Yeah. What you're fighting over assigned seating here.
And that was so insane because not to bring up last week's episode, but they all started making their food last week without looking at the plate of leftovers Danny Tom had left for them. That was also insane. These competitors are weird and bad at Top Chef. That might actually be the problem.
I mean, it was somewhat relatable. Like, I really liked the twist at the end of at the end of the blind taste test where they were like, actually, did you notice that there were 26 ingredients and they were all in alphabetical order? Yeah. And everybody was
that
like,
rocked.
Oh, shit. I did not notice that. Because that was, it's like, oh, how do we make them feel even dumber in the challenge that makes everyone feel dumb already? Love that.
Yeah. The other one I love that they normally do, which I don't think they're going to do this season, is when they make them teach their family members behind a curtain how to cook their dish. And then they're like, this guy's an idiot. He doesn't know how to do anything.
Yeah.
And then they're like, it was my dad.
that's great TV. Yeah, always.
Love when you make them feel stupid.
So this episode, they transitioned from, you know, the blind taste test. By the way, before I jump ahead to the elimination challenge, for the last few years, I've been sort of ripping on this show for people making crudos and ceviches and like raw preparations and the judges always loving it. I think this started.
Everyone hates the raw stuff this year.
Yeah, they hate it. Yeah. I think this started with like Jeremy Ford and Amar Santana's season where.
Yeah, that guy looked like a thumb. That's Jeremy, right?
Yeah.
Thumb guy. Okay.
Yeah. Kind of a cool, just like chill jujitsu dude. And so like, I don't know if the judges have taken to heart me ripping on them for always liking ceviches and crudos, or if they've just legitimately gotten tired of them. But boy, they seem to hate them this season. And like you said about the competitors not being good competitors, you would think like by the fourth or fifth agua chile that the judges hated that the contestants would pick up on the idea of like, hey, maybe don't make an agua chile anymore. Mm-hmm. But
Manny kept making things that they hated and they kept getting away with it for like six episodes in a row. They'd be like, this is just meat and sauce again. And the meat is sometimes it's raw on my plate, it's perfect on my plate. That happened every time he cooked something this season.
In the quickfire, as soon as he said I'm gonna make an edamame puree with salmon, I was like, ugh, because I'm wanting Manny to like go far ever since he made the pozole in like the episode one, which looked really good. He won that's like a sort of a family dish in my house, and so I was really excited for him. And then every time he says he's gonna make a French sauce or make something that's like decidedly not Mexican, I sort of slap myself in the forehead going like, Manny, the fuck are you doing?
Well, he made something Mexican this week.
First he made the salmon crudo, which like when he put it on the plate, I was like, yeah, that looks like a good plate of food. Apparently it wasn't. They didn't like it. It was bland. And then so in the elimination
Savannah
challenge,
made Caesar dressing with cheddar cheese.
Yeah, big. Cheddar Caesar sounds like a hereditary title.
That seems
in
like something I served at the Bubba Gum Shrimp Company when I worked there for 10 years. But I'm sure it was delicious.
10 years? I didn't realize you were there for 10 years.
It was like six, but okay. Still,
that feels like 10 at Bubba Gump. I'm sure in Bubba Gump years, that's like 20 years. I think.
Yeah.
Were you a waiter the whole time?
I was a bartender briefly. I trained people. I did some stuff. I would if they were really busy in the kitchen, I'd work the salad station. A little bit off.
How was the food? Is it as bad as I imagine it is?
It's like a step up from Applebee's.
Okay. I don't think I've been to an Applebee's in like a decade,
or like a Chili's, or you know what I mean? It's like a slightly nicer fast casual.
I remember I went on years ago, I went on like a Bumble or one of the app dates with a Belgian woman who'd moved to San Francisco maybe, I don't know, a few months prior. And I was like, oh, you know, like what are there? I assume Europeans have better tasted food. And I was, you know, like what? What have you been enjoying in San Francisco? And she's like, I keep going to Bubba Gump. I really like the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company. Pretty funny.
I mean, it's consistent.
Sure.
There are certain things where I'm like, I could eat that again.
Yeah. I worked at Pizza Hut way back in the day, and I still contend that a pan pizza that's crunchy on the bottom, it's pretty good.
I missed the Bigfoot.
The Bigfoot?
The Bigfoot from Pizza Hut.
Was that like just like the long
big
one?
Square pizza. Yeah, okay. It was a long one. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there was something great about being at like a another eight-year-old's birthday party and getting that middle piece of the Bigfoot pizza, you know?
Yeah, nice crunchy one. So, okay. So the elimination challenge, they went with like the, you know, do a dish that exemplifies culinary growth.
They really wanted everyone to tell a story, and only one person today told a story.
So here's the thing about this challenge. I feel like if the food is good, like the story is, you know, exemplify your growth on Top Chef. And if you give them good food, like, doesn't that just say self-explanatorily?
Well,
like, you know,
one of them literally made a dish where he was like, I could have made that like two times. He's like, this is my back pocket dish.
That's what Kristen told them to do. She said, is there a dish that you know that you'd crush now that you didn't early on? Like, that is exactly what Manny did. Because in the Restaurant Wars episode, he was supposed to make that pescado a la Veracruzana, and they bought pork tenderloin inexplicably instead. So, you know, like, he was trying to crush a dish that he flubbed early on. Like, it made perfect sense. But instead, he kept doing, like, trying to go back to the super corny, like, I'm trying to honor my ancestors' story.
We
no
also
one was buying
learned
it.
That Danny is just obsessed with crappy tea. He loves making tea that's bad.
Soba tea. Yeah, all the stories were kind of bad except for Savannah's. Uh-huh.
The second she said it, I was like, well, she just won.
Right. Well, she also did this thing that I've been saying is smart this entire season, which is just like, don't even try to cook a piece of protein for Tom because... unless you do it perfectly, he's going to pick it apart and it's going to...
Well, they also always love... It's like historically on Top Chef. They love when you're like, I took the simple onion and that's the main part of my dish.
Right.
Or like the simple potato. Or I made clam chowder, but instead of clam, there's carrots. They love that shit. Which, by the way, I know that we're going back like 15 episodes or whatever here, but there's... I gotta taste this carrot clam chowder because that seems so boring to me. You added carrots to a soup? Great.
Right. Right. But I think that is the story of Danny this season. Is like, when you eat a roasted carrot, it's delicious. It's not hard to make a roasted carrot taste good. So he just does stuff like that, and you look at it on TV and it's like, yeah, that's a plate of carrots. It does not look interesting at all.
There were like three grilled baby carrots in a bowl of clam chowder, and they were like, this is the best thing I've ever eaten.
Yeah, it's again, it's like the dishes that are good are not reading good on television. They read like super boring on television.
I was bummed Michelle got kicked. I was rooting for Michelle and Sue.
Yes.
Yeah. Michelle Sue, great story.
Yeah,
I was a barbecue pit. I've been a barbecue pit master for 10 years and forgot I was good at cooking fine dining. That is a great Top Chef story. Yeah.
And all of her dishes like sounded great. They looked great on the plate.
Well,
like if
not
they were...
the table, not the mosaic she made on the table.
Yeah,
but
that looked awful. That definitely looked awful.
That whole challenge was crazy though. Like,
I mean, that's a classic Top Chef challenge. Like, oh, plate it on a table and be all artsy.
Yeah, but
it's
also like my favorite. What's your favorite Top Chef challenge ever?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, like, ironically speaking, I think there was one where it was like they were supposed to cook a dish that evoked the memory of like a legendary Texan, and like someone had to cook a dish that evoked the legacy of Babe Didrikson Zaharias, who was like a champion golfer. Like, what do you... That I love the ones that are just conceptually completely impossible.
That's the thing. The challenges this season have been too easy.
The Frank Lloyd Wright one
was great. That's a classic style top. But like my favorite ones were like, do you remember when they had to make space food?
Yes.
I loved that one.
Yeah.
When they had to make like fine dining, but NASA in tubes, that was the best. Or there was that awesome one, Buddha season, where they got paired up and had to do dishes that looked the same but tasted different.
Yeah.
But like, just this season, it's just like, yeah, serve it on a table. Make us whatever, but serve it on a table.
Right. Yeah. Like, they're
also
not...
when they were doing that weird fish boil one, oh, my God. Girlfriend pointed out the funniest thing. Like, everyone was so excited the first time they threw that fire on the fish boil, but the crowd got less and less excited every time it happened.
I like that there was just like a war boy from Fury Road who just comes in and just like throws gas on the fire and is like, ah, I did it.
His name was literally Torch.
That's right. That's right. I really want to know, like, if that actually works. Like, if that actually, like, boils the scum off.
Scum off. There's no.
I mean, we're also, like, talking about, like, it improves a fish boil, which is just kind of a dumb thing to do in general. Yeah. Like, no one wants to eat boiled fish.
Boiled shrimp, people want to eat.
Sure. Yeah. Shellfish.
Yeah.
Sounds great. Crawfish. Yeah, amazing. But but like boiling a piece of whitefish sounds like the worst idea ever.
Hey everyone, Matt Lieb here. If you know me, you know there's only two things in this entire world I care about more than rewatching my favorite TV shows. It's gut health and former karate champion Chuck Norris. That's why I love Morning Kick. You're probably asking, what is Morning Kick? Well, I'll tell you. It's a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Look, I live in Los Angeles, all right? And this is a city defined by its culture of people drinking green drinks. Unlike the other green drinks out there, this one actually tastes good. It tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade. It's so good. And since I started drinking Morning Kick, my digestion is smoother and my body looks leaner. And I have energy all day. All day energy, which I need because I have a child and she's walking now, which means she's running now, which means I need energy. The thing I like most about Morning Kick is how easy it is to make. Just mix with water and stir. Simple. No blenders, no convection ovens, no turning your pantry into a science lab in order to make a SCOBY so you can brew your own probiotic drink. No. All you need to do is have some water and get yourself some Morning Kick, stir it in a glass, and baby, that digestion of yours, smooth. Smooth like silk. And you're gonna look good. And you're going to feel good. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/podyourself for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/podyourself today. All right, let's get back to the show. Summertime and the living... is thirsty, at least it is in the Lieb household. And when we are trying to get hydrated, we reach for the best water on earth, Fiji water.
Fiji water is bottled at the source and untouched by man until you unscrew the cap. Fiji water really is from the islands of Fiji, 1,600 miles from the nearest continent. And it is sourced from an ancient artesian aquifer and is naturally preserved from external elements.
That's right, Vince. You can literally taste the difference. So whenever we do an ad, we sometimes get samples sent to us of whatever we're advertising. And when I first got sent Fiji water bottles in the mail, I thought it was hilarious. I was like, I've tasted water before. Why would they do this? But believe me when I say, this is absolutely the best water I've ever tasted. And that's because Fiji water is a natural artesian water with 100% natural electrolytes. Unlike some other top premium bottled water brands, Fiji water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring.
That's right, Matt. Fiji water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving it its signature smooth, soft taste. Fiji water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the US, and it has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH.
Also, Fiji water's 330 milliliter and 500 milliliter bottles are made
from using 100% recycled plastic. Fiji Water continues to lead the top premium bottled water competition on launching 100% recycled plastic bottles. The aquifer Fiji Water originates from is a sustainable source and will continue to replenish as the rain and water cycle persists in the islands of Fiji.
So get stocked up on Fiji Water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick some up today for your next backyard party, beach or pool day, hike, or even your home office. It's not just water.
It's Fiji Water.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
And and that is one of the things, one of the bright spots this season is Dan and his like cynicism and just like being like, yeah, no, this is a terrible, like he's not even playing the game where we have to pretend that every challenge is a great
idea.
Here's
the question. Do the challenges, are they kind of boring this season because it's entirely based on white culture?
It's got to be. I mean, you're trying
right?
to, like, you're trying to celebrate
the
culture.
We're boiling fish. We're like, we're eating raw vegetables with ranch before our dinner at a supper club.
Yeah.
You know,
Midwest.
I mean?
No offense to the Midwest.
Like, I love the, look, when they were in the Miller High Life cave, I was like, I want to go there.
Yeah.
Love the Midwest. Like, don't get me wrong.
Even the meat raffle. The meat raffle.
Yeah, meat raffle's great. Great. Meat raffle, great. I wish meat raffle was an elimination challenge, actually.
Yeah, meat raffle,
wasted
supper
on
club.
Yeah.
Meat raffle, supper club, Miller High Life. Those were all solid. Yeah. But then, you get into boiled fish and I don't know what the other one was where. Frank Lloyd Wright. That was,
That was good. Frank Lloyd Wright was good. There just haven't been that conceptually challenging of.
There haven't been
like
that conceptually challenging,
they haven't been like, everyone knows Jurassic World Evolution is coming out this season. Cook me a plate of food a specific dinosaur would eat.
Yeah, I'm on the fence. Like, clearly the sponsored content has gotten less obvious this season, mm-hmm. and there haven't been the quick fires where it's like, all right, whatever you make, it's got to go on top of a Triscuit.
Yeah. Those, though.
Okay. Yeah. The worst was the Fast and the Furious one last season where they couldn't even get any of the stars from the,
they filmed a video for them.
They filmed a video, but they couldn't even get like Vin Diesel to come.
Yeah,
judge.
It was Michelle Rodriguez and Tyrese, right?
I am fascinated with how they land on whatever celebrities. Cause this season they had
our friend
Kamau Bell.
Yeah,
sure. Random. They also had a lady from Pitch Perfect.
Yeah, that was weird.
Not...
the baseball challenge. That one was good. Baseball, I liked. That one was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anytime there's a sports episode, I'm into it, where they have to cook next to each other and then they hold up little flags or whatever.
Yeah.
They're like, touchdown.
Right, yeah. When they make it sports, it's great.
Yeah, yeah.
So this season, in terms of controversies, like the only thing that we've got
Danny stole a dish that he won.
Danny stole a dish, which you sent me the article.
A dish he was a sous chef at the restaurant. So I'm guessing he definitely had some things to say about that dish in its conception, but that's just me.
Yeah, so the dish was like a scallop mousse inside of a leaf that was served in like a broth. And... Mm-hmm. Even the head chef at the restaurant who created it, like, she mentioned that, oh yeah, our sous chef Danny made a really good scallop mousse and I wanted to incorporate that into a dish.
Well, that sounds like the main part of that dish, though. It's called scallop mousse with a cabbage on top.
It does. But that was also, if you'll remember, like the chaos challenge. Uh-huh, and his idea of chaos was to just serve a dish that he'd made in his restaurant, which doesn't seem
that he
like
stole.
Well, the fact that the head chef like completely called him out on it. Uh-huh. I mean, either they have personal issues between each other for other things, or you know, something about that was. It did seem like kind of shady that he just served a dish from his restaurant in a chaos challenge and didn't mention.
See, I actually disagree. I don't think, I just, like, part of being a chef, they did it this episode, is like learning from the places you've been. Like,
sure.
Like, no one is like, I made pad thai, and then it, no one's like, you didn't say who invented pad thai when you served me pad thai. You know what I mean? Like,
no, that's totally true. But that's also, it's also a little bit different, like, when the challenge is literally like, oh, create chaos, throw out the rule book, challenge yourself, do something that's never been done before.
That wasn't the complaint people were having on the internet. They were like acting like comedians and stolen jokes. Like,
sure.
It's not the same. It's just not the same thing. Food is about, like, it's literally about trading recipes and, like, changing something and making it your own or whatever. Yes. Like, and how it's different when I make it versus when you make it.
Yeah.
You
but
literally
that's also...
wrote a column about that for Film Drunk for, like, years, where it was like, me and this other Uprox guy, you both cooked fucking pasta. Whose is better?
Right. But that's also something that is maybe on the chef to say that when they're presenting their chaotic dish.
I don't care about that. I just don't care. I'm sorry. Like,
fair enough. But again, it was also a dish that, I don't know, I guess that was...
They showed it again today. It's so the most memorable dish of this Top Chef season that they showed it again today.
Yeah. And even that, it doesn't look like the most.
It looks like a cabbage roll.
It doesn't read delicious.
It looks like a cabbage roll.
Like, yeah, Sue's dishes have read the best to me because it's usually like crunchy. Like, there's a bunch of crunchy stuff on it.
Me were the ones that read the
Michelle's
best to me.
Yeah, because you can see the texture of their dishes on the screen. Whereas like that cabbage roll thing, it just looks like a soft cabbage roll in a broth. And it looks like, okay, they're going to eat baby food. I'm supposed to be excited about this.
Anyway, back to today's episode.
Yeah. They're supposed to evoke growth. Manny, he chose the corniest story. He did not nail the story.
And it was also a lie. He was just going to make that fish anyway, no matter what the challenge was.
Yeah, and then he sort of screwed it up. Like, he seared it, and he was trying
to... And then he was like, my plate's too hot. My pan's too hot.
Right. That seemed like he was trying to cook them all at the same time, which, you're going to get an inconsistent. Because he's pan searing it, like, two at
a
time.
And putting it in the oven,
So then they're resting different amounts of times and then putting them all in the oven at the same time, which, it's got an inconsistent cook to it.
I don't know how three of them were raw, but yes.
Right. Yeah, because fish usually does not typically, like, snapper does not typically take a long time to cook. Like, that just seemed like, okay, he got the clock.
You know what
away
does take a long time to cook, apparently?
What's
a potato
that?
Pave.
Yeah.
Which Savannah did it in 15 minutes or something.
Well, I think the difference there was she got the oven part out of the way first, and then it went into the pan right before service. So it was like sort of the opposite. And she told a good story, and she served a thing that didn't have a protein in it.
Laura made little dumplings.
So that one to me, like, as a viewer,
that looked
like
insane.
It looked by far the hardest one to cook because as a guy who's
made, they were like pea-sized
tiny.
They were so small.
Tiny manti. And as a guy who's made like a ravioli a lot in my life, like one of the main things you worry about is whether they're going to come open when you cook them. And she made some that were like deliberately open topped dumplings. Yeah. I assume she just like steamed those instead of boiling.
I have no idea.
Yeah. They looked amazing. And she did like a, you know, she got some Mexican spices in there, which I don't know. Yeah. I guess is a good thing. I don't know.
No, that was cool. See, that's to me what makes her, what's made her less interesting is she's just like, I cook the food from the Mediterranean, even though I worked at 11 Madison Park and also I'm from Mexico City. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, branch out, Laura.
Yeah. Yeah. Does it annoy you that Danny cannot pronounce her name to save his life? Like, no, it doesn't.
No, it's his OCD.
he can only say Lada.
Yeah.
And not Laura, even though, like, I assume he speaks Spanish. Mm-hmm. As a guy who's Dominican and has worked in kitchens.
And works in kitchens his entire life. Yeah.
There's no way he doesn't speak, like, at least a decent amount of Spanish. But yeah, like, that's sort of, like, she could be interesting, but she doesn't sell it in any way.
Anyway, her food looked good this week. And normally, I do not think her food looks good. Normally, it's like, she just named 1,000 things on this plate. And, like, if 8 of them are fruit. And I'm like, no thanks.
So Savannah has won 3 quick fires in a row. She won the elimination challenge. Like, this entire season, it had seemed like a two-way race between Dan and Danny and maybe Michelle to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Now, like, are Savannah and Laura, like, legitimately favorites, or are they still
Danny is going to win.
Okay. Yeah, it seems like even when Danny screws up.
But, like, this is just what happens on Top Chef. There's always, like, somebody was in the middle the entire time, and then all of a sudden they win, like, 3 things in a row right at the end, and it's like, oh, they've got a shot. And then they bite off more than they can chew on the final menu and forget to put things on the plate. This is what happens. It's Dawn. Remember Dawn? Yeah. I love Dawn. Dawn's one of my favorite Top Chef contestants ever, but, like, time management was not her friend.
No. And that, to me, is, like, the least maybe applicable skill, because, like, in a restaurant, the food might go out 5 minutes later, but, like, you're going to wait till it's right to send it out.
But also, like, she doesn't have to conceptualize the thing I ordered off the menu and then cook it in a limited amount of time. Yeah.
So slight counterpoint to saying this always happens. Like, what about Stefan, the arrogant Finnish guy who was just dominating for the entire season? Mm-hmm. And I think in the finale he served, like, he got overconfident and he tried to do some, like, stupid dessert thing with a bunch of like little lollipop deals. And everybody was like, this sucks. And he ended up losing.
Well, but they edited him to suck the entire season. No one liked Stefan.
But he kept winning, and I kind of liked, I feel like you need, like, the arrogant. I think everybody is a little more media trained now, so you don't get like the arrogant guys that are like Stefan and Marcel, and you don't get like the kooky people like Richard Blaze or Brian Malarkey or the guy with the wrist bangle. They brought back the Chester the Cheetah guy, whose name I forget, which was nice because it was like a throwback to the olden days of Top Chefs where they were like weird reality show caricature type people.
You know what's funny? They keep showing that like Finnish commercial with a Mar and a woman they claim was on season 1 of Top Chef. A season I've watched 3 times, by the way, and I do not remember her at all.
I think once the season's over, I'm going to go back and, like, do a rankings for season 1 and go episode by episode. Maybe we do, like, a post show just because, I want to remember what it was like when it was still still a reality show and not whatever it is now.
Yeah, when Billy Joel's wife was the host.
Was she bad? Was she as bad as everybody says?
I mean, yeah.
Like, she's become a food host since then. Like, pretty consistently.
I mean, she's not bad, but she's not Padma. Like, Top Chef is a strange thing where it's like only does Tim Gunn have to do as much as the host of Top Chef. You know what I mean? Where it's like, they're basically a judge too. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like Vanessa Lachey is just talking to the camera. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Which is another person who, like, seemed like maybe they shouldn't be on a cooking show, but now she has got to be like an insane millionaire because she has an entire empire of Netflix dating shows that she hosts.
Yeah, good for her. proud of Vanessa Lachey.
It shows that you don't necessarily have to be like a rocket scientist to be good at TV, because she's she's just there. Like, she's just, there's no filter.
She's got to be around and nice.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's all people and not have want a filter. Out of that role. Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
I do miss Padma's, like, tipsiness and the way she, like, made everything sound very sexual. But yeah, I don't like. I can't find fault with anything about Kristen.
I like Kristen's maudlinness, where she's just like, "This changed my life, and it's gonna change yours." Like once a week, you know what I mean? Where she's like, "I know exactly where you're at, where you are, and it made me crazy too."
Yeah, and she also
I
has,
like it.
She also has like eager to please child vibe with Tom. Like,
yeah, it's nice. I like that the host is like a friend of the contestants now, instead of like an intimidating.
Yeah,
presence,
you don't need. You don't need
like,
two
I'm afraid
Tom.
To cook Indian food for Padma. Like, no one is ever going to be afraid to cook something for Kristen. You know what I mean? It's like just a different vibe.
Yeah, how fucked up was it that like the first season without Padma, they have like a contestant who specializes in like Tamil
lady,
cuisine.
She fucked up. Like, I thought Roscoe was going to win the whole thing.
I did too.
Like she was owning, man.
And she was like, she had an interesting personality and she cooked interesting looking food. But that's the other thing that I've been thinking about this season is like maybe just the people that would have made it really interesting and fun ended up getting kicked off.
I mean, who else do you feel that way about though?
Sue, like mostly her and Sue and Michelle.
Yeah.
Like if you had her and Sue and Michelle like leading into the finale, I feel like it would be a lot. It'd be a good trade versus Savannah and Laura and Danny.
Yeah.
And I can't tell how much Danny annoys me just because he has like all the Zoomer traits, like where
he stole that dish.
It's not that. It's his neatness and the fact that he says "let's go" and all of his sound bites feel like canned quotes that you hear anybody on Fortnite saying.
Would you rather Amanda was still there?
At first, yes, but like maybe midway through her run, like her nasally vocal
speaking
fry
of Zoomers,
got a thousand
like
times
Chef's
worse.
First weeb.
I almost said that, but then I didn't know if I was like if I'm allowed to like call someone a weeb or not.
I think you are. Just a weird season, man. Anyway, excited to see what happens on the cruise. We forgot to... Savannah won.
Hold on,
Manny
I think...
got sent
I can't,
home.
Oh, no, okay, it's still recording. I mean, what is the cruise going to shake anything up? Do you think it's going to change the basic dynamic of the show?
No, because, again, they're going from Madison, Wisconsin to a cruise ship, which is also white culture. This is a celebration of bland mid American culture.
You have to cook something that seems exotic to someone who wears a t-shirt that says like Disney and Starbucks make me happy or whatever.
But Curacao will be fun, I'm sure. They'll get to shop at some weird market and cook in a weird kitchen where they're sweating. It's gonna be so hot.
Is that the one that's like Dutch? I mean, if you're talking about like which country you want to be colonized by in order to produce like interesting culinary thing, like definitely the English and the Dutch are the last two that you want.
It's true. Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's so sad. Like the Caribbean islands that were colonized by like the French all have really like good food and vibrant culinary influences, and then like you see the ones
that
are great, like the Philippines. Like, you know, you got Southeast Asian meeting Spanish, like of course it's going to be great food. But then, you know, you see people,
but you heard it here first, guys. Vince is pro colonialism.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. No, it's just so sad. You see certain parts of Polynesia and it's like, all right, what's like your what are some of your dishes? And like half of them have spam and canned corned beef in them. And you're like, oh God, really? Like you live in paradise. And and those are the food staples, spam and canned corned beef.
I actually like spam, so I don't know.
You know, you can do good things with spam. Yeah. Even the British
spam
have
gets
some...
so crispy, dog.
Yeah. I do like
ever
crispy
had a
on
spam
the outside.
Fry?
Spam musubi. Yeah.
Yeah.
They got some good stuff. even the British, like their, some of their delicacies, quote unquote, are pretty good when done well.
Turning around, I think the British get too much shit for their food being bad, actually. I mean, their food is bad, but it's become like saying Guy Fieri sucks.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, we're going the other way on that one now. Like,
yeah.
Guess what? What was that? When we went to the dinner last year, what was the...
The English breakfast?
The soup Sarah made. It's like the white one.
Cullen Skink.
Cullen Skink? That was like one of the best things I've ever eaten, Sarah's Cullen Skink.
It was really good. But again, like you're comparing, it's hard to compare this season with last season because last season you had Sarah and Buddha and Amar and like people that were interesting. And this season it just seems like there's 20 Charbels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, there are. I wonder if this is the first season in a while they haven't kind of leaned on bringing people back.
Yeah. It's
like
gonna happen.
Even just as judges, they were there for the fish boil, but that was it. Like,
I feel like that's gonna happen in the next four episodes.
Yeah, bring Shota back, dog. Next season.
Yeah, I thought you were talking about bringing like the early.
No, because like Amar was like back in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where they put like two veterans back in.
Yeah.
Like,
I want to see David Murphy, the cowboy hat guy, have to be someone's. Someone's sous chef and he's gonna be like, oh, I think we should use like food waste and serve it in a cowboy hat.
Oh man, Amanda's gonna be somebody's sous chef. That's gonna be rough.
Yeah, chef. Actually, the idea of chaos is like very close to my heart.
She made interesting food, though.
She did. No, her food looked great. It just felt like she opened her mouth when she talked less and less throughout the course of the season. And by the last few episodes, I was like, I can't take this voice anymore. It's over. But yeah, I think it's been a pod. I think we got through this one.
I think that sounds right. Thanks for having me, Vince.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
If you want me to.
I do. Can you tell people where to find you?
Yeah. Round Ball Rock is my podcast with newly married man Sean Keen.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about basketball, sort of. We'll probably be talking about the Clippers miniseries here pretty soon.
Yeah.
So stay tuned for that.
Is this I got to get my like annoying dad opinions of basketball off my chest.
Let's hear them.
It seems like Luka spends all his time pushing off with his opposite hand, and then as soon as he stops and someone bumps into him, he gets a foul call.
Yeah, but he's also awesome.
No, he's very good.
Yeah, he rules. Also, you can't be rooting against him. I'm sorry.
I'm not.
It's the Boston Celtics. Like, we can't let them win again.
And even Kyrie Irving, like, I want to root against him, but like he's really good at basketball.
His takes are bad, but he's cool now.
He's also fun to watch play basketball.
Yeah, like, he's really fun to watch play basketball. Yeah.
It seems like a lot of the teams that got eliminated, like they had a lot of talent, but they would have one guy that just did really stupid shit at the end of games.
Yeah, yeah. Timberwolves had lots of guys like that.
What's his name? Anthony Edwards.
Yeah.
Like super talented, awesome. But just made dog shit decisions.
Really young. I encourage you and your listeners, Vince, though, to look into Boston Celtics coach Joe Mazzulla, his whole thing. Because he's like a literal sociopath.
Oh, is he really?
Oh yeah, dude.
Last
year he said he watches The Town 3 times a week.
Right. Just trying to imbibe that Jeremy Renner energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's great.
Okay,
love him.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.